Have you ever lost an idea? Yeah, had one that felt really good, but then it fell through the net, slipped out, disappeared, and you just couldn't get it back. You kind of knew that you had, you know, an idea surface, but it had, you know, it had dived down into the depth and it had gone, just like a fish, you know, in a way. You'd almost hooked it, but it hadn't worked, you know, so it was gone. And try as you might, it wouldn't come back. Have you had that experience? Okay, here's a routine for preventing yourself having that experience. A very simple routine, a daily routine if you like. What you do is, before you have a shower, before you have a shower, you get your smartphone and you prime it and you set it off. And you then simply have it there so that in case you have the experience that loads of people have, which is that while you're in the shower, some of your best ideas come along. Why should that be? Well, it's real elemental stuff, isn't it? It's a combination of, it's water on the little brain cells. I'm sure Hercule Poirot had some things to say about the little brain cells. But yeah, it can come at any time. So, like, for example, I mean, this is a important fact that it's a monologue with background music. Hold on a second, I gotta take the iPhone out of the water. This is just not easy to do. It just went right under the water. Just one second. Okay, no, sorry. Fortunately, I don't have to dry it off. It's sort of self-drying, this particular... Apple haven't released this phone to many people. I got a beta version. It's a self-drying phone. It's got some sort of thing in the battery, which... don't ask me about these things, they think they're much too technical. They just asked me to test it because I had developed this other piece of, I can't really say much about it because I've signed a non-disclosure agreement, but I found a way of recording the sound in the shower. Let's just call it that. But anyway, this is an Apple invention, and let's see if it works. But back to the point here about, setting yourself up. Now, so that you can capture those weird ideas, the well-known process is to keep a notebook beside your bed so that at night when you wake up from a dream, you jot it down. You jot down what it is, because if you don't jot it down, you wake up in the morning, assuming you've gone back to sleep, or even if you haven't gone back to sleep, and the dream is lost. You know, you can't actually remember, you just have this vague impulse, vague memory that, oh yeah, I had a dream last night. But how many times have you woken up in the night with the sensation that you've cracked it? Something that was a knotty problem has all kind of dissipated into clarity. Have you had that experience? And then discovered that by the time breakfast time came, you can't actually remember what the solution to the issue was. I mean, that's a problem, right? You know how they say when you're kind of trying to work out a business, you first of all identify the pain that people are currently experiencing. You start with that. What is the pain? And if the pain is, you know, how big is that pain? I mean, if it's big, you can get rid of it, and you might have a viable business. Yeah? So, how often do you wake up in the night feeling at your most creative?
It's not. On the other hand, if it's anything to do with creativity, it isn't to do with quantity. But it certainly is that if you've never woken up in the night, say during the last month, and had this sensation that, oh God, something's got away from me and I wish it hadn't, and you then go into normal daily life and you say to yourself, oh my goodness, look, I'm at my most creative when I'm most under-resourced. You know, I don't have a telephone beside me, I don't have a pencil, a paper, I haven't got a jotter. You know, when I'm at my most vulnerable, I'm at my most creative. Thanks very much, universe. It just means that, you know, I occasionally get a buzz out of being creative, but I ain't got much to show for it. Okay, there are the things people say is, you know, have a notebook beside the bed. Other people say, you know, this was, I call this the Nixon approach. President Nixon in the United States, I mean, probably before many of you were born, but he was a man who saw the benefits of recording all the time. So that the rich nuggets of that were uttered in the course of, you know, commanding the USA. That means being commander-in-chief, by the way. I don't mean everyone in the United States. I don't mean to imply that everyone in the United States was compliant with the Richard Nixon, or any other president for that matter. I have to say that the American, you know, charter, or whatever they call it, proclamation of, I mean, the basic principles on which America was founded, got to be one of the greatest things ever written down by designers of human society. Forgive me, I haven't read all of them, all of the other designs, but I am quite impressed by what was written down. So back to the question, now we're on to shaving, you see. If I could shave some time off this audioboo, wouldn't it be better? I mean, if I could really take a scalpel and get rid of all the words that are superfluous and give you what I'm offering you in a smaller box, in a sort of something like a Tiffany box, that would be more like a diamond gift, you know. I've got to give you something in the size of a Tiffany box. And if you haven't had a Tiffany box recently, if you haven't recently received a gift of a box from Tiffany's containing inside it the opposite of a Pandora's box. Don't worry. I won't be much of a thing to say, well, neither have I, but the point is that Tiffany box may be just around the corner. You know? I mean, this period of time without a Tiffany box could be properly called research, preparation. It could be the sort of thing that people go into a Buddhist monastery for 9 years in order to prepare to come out, to be kind of a fit person later. Oh yes. So back to the core theme. And by the way, if you ever hear me going, you know, jumping all over the bloody place, you know, leaving an idea kind of half expressed and then going on to yet another thing. And if you ever experience me as thereby creating for you the difficulty of where the hell is this guy going? And, you know, just as I'm getting my head around what he was aiming me to get my head around, he's gone and run off in another direction. If you ever experience me like that, it's a warning sign. It's an early warning sign that I'm getting too, you know, hyper, and that I need, well, I'll use the colloquialism, I need to take my tablets, you know. But basically, I need to be better at balance, you know. I'm actually going to practice the rest of this week a different tone of voice. tone of voice which is like this one. It's got a element of thought to it. It's not just I know what I'm thinking after I said it. It actually is I'll think what I'm going to say before I say it. At least it implies that, you know, if you speak slowly and deliberately, you yourself and maybe even other people will think that you knew what you were going to say in advance. But I think I'm doomed forever to not have a clue what I'm going to say until after I've said it. But I could at least give other people the experience of, you know, thinking that I actually know what I'm talking about. Instead of all the time not knowing what I'm talking about. I mean, I've had an awful lot of practice at not knowing. You could have a 2x2, and on one axis there is a knowing and not knowing, and on the other axis there is expressing and not expressing. So you have, for example, things you're not expressing which you don't know, and on the other extreme you have things you are expressing which you do know, and you can fill in the other two bits of the quadrant. And that's the new thing that came out of this morning's shower. That is the new 2x2. It kind of has a slight resonance in my head with Donald Rumsfeld, the unknown unknowns, but then again, he didn't invent that. That came from Johann Hari, called Johari Window. And I haven't certainly invented, but it's come to me, this notion of knowing and expressing. Where, how on earth could that 2x2 be useful? Where, in what? In what arena of human... in what arena of social interaction? I mean, I'm meant to be a sociologist. Besides the fact that I am actually a trained sociologist, I ought to be paying some... what would I say? I ought to be genuflecting back to the founders of sociology. You know, like, for example, Max Weber, in his discussion of action, social action, and stuff like that, and how you go from an individual to a couple to a triad, and how the nature of social interaction changes when you move from, you know, the dyad to the triad and beyond. As you can tell, I've lost control of my self. I have some self-awareness, but I would actually quite welcome, reactions that say, Paul, slow down, go back to your topic, stick with it. Don't go off on yet another tangent. You know, it's not good for you, Paul, to be doing that. Never mind. Excuse me, I got to take my tablet. Just a second. Okay, there you have it. My guaranteed personality change for the day. I'm now, I've got one of these tablets that you take that, you know, changes your personality. You know, it's Orwell. It was in 1984. And George Orwell would have... This is the bit that was edited out of the book. I forget who was George Orwell's editor. Must have been an extraordinary person, though, to edit George Orwell. And that's another... See, now I'm going to resist the attraction of going off in a stream of thought
about who edited George Orwell and how do you edit, you know, a master craftsman or craft person? How do you edit their work? You know, who would have edited Michelangelo? I'm not going down that road, right? But coming back to the central theme of this entire audio, you never know when an idea can strike you. You never know when. And the other thing is, the first reaction I get in this kind of area is a sensation that, oh wow, I've come up with a great idea. And the most important reflex I have is called the squirrel reflex, which is bury it, bury it, bury it. You bury the enthusiasms for a while at least. Ideally, you bury it for, you know, a couple of months, really. And then you go back and you dig it up. And, you know, you either can't find it, so it never really printed itself, you know, irrevocably on your memory, or else when you dig it up, it's no good anymore. It's faded, or it's, what do you call it? It's rotted. Yeah, the best ideas rot. But the very experience of having the sensation of a valuable idea, the experience of having the sensation of a valuable idea, is an experience in self-affirmation. It really is a bit like, you know, you're saying to yourself, oh look, I'm a good enough person to have a good idea. I mean, that's a great affirmation. I know loads of women who would find it impossible to say that about themselves. I mean, who wouldn't dare say out loud, certainly, that they're a good enough person to have good ideas. You know, they wouldn't say it. Don't for a minute want to say that I think that all women, you know, are like this or like that. But why on earth have I experienced women as being inclined to hide their talent under a bushel or whatever it is? Well, many a flower is born to blush unseen, waste sweetness in the desert air. That's from one of the greatest poems ever written. You'll find it awfully easily if you Google even that little phrase. But what is my main thrust here? My main thrust here is all about the difficulties of holding on to the person who you really are. I mean, you are a person with ideas. You are a person who is, you're a machine for bringing things out of the unconscious into the conscious and connecting, in a sense, the unconscious to the material world. You're a machine for doing that. You've been perfectly designed over history, time immemorial, to be able to do that. And you have all sorts of impulses like, oh God, look, other people have great ideas, I just have my ideas. So, you know, very few people do things like take a recorder into the shower and speak out loud what's going through their head, mind, I didn't mean head, really, body, in such a way that, you know, without worrying about the consequences, it could be drivel. I mean, well, somebody like me would never call it drivel, because as far as I'm concerned, every utterance contains the DNA of your magic. It's as simple as that. So there's absolutely nothing that you could say to me which I would find to be drivel. No matter what you said yourself, I mean, you're entitled to say anything you like yourself about yourself. That's your business. But the rest of us are entitled to make up our own mind. And consequently, we need tools. We need props and supports. And the idea of